at King's College London, and this is a paper about the BBC and their attempts to televise horse racing through the early period of television. It's based on material which I'm hoping to turn into a chapter of my PhD, so any feedback will be most welcome. So the need and the desire to capture movements of the racehorse, movements which aren't discernible to the naked eye, goes right back to the beginning of motion picture technology. This is, behind me, is basically the first motion picture ever created. In 1887, a man called Edward Muybridge was hired to settle a bet between two gentlemen about whether there's any point in the cycle, in the horse racehorse's gallop where all four hooves are off the floor. And to do that, he had to come up with a way of taking a lot of pictures very quickly. And as you can see, afterwards, he realised that if you present a lot of pictures very quickly to the human eye, it gives the impression of movement. And therefore, movies and film was born. And it turns out that there is actually a point of the gallop where all four hooves are off the floor. But 50 years after that, the BBC in Britain was first starting to experiment with television technology. And they too came up against the racehorse as a particular problem for recording movements and broadcasting on television. So just in this presentation, I'm going to start off assuming that many people in the audience may be not specialists in television history, to give a brief overview of the BBC and kind of contextualise horse racing within that within the corporation. And then I'll talk about the BBC's encounters with racehorses and trying to televise the animal in their early period of television technology. And then we'll look at the unique problems that they encountered in trying to televise the equine athlete, and then finally look at the adaptations that they made in the post-war environment to that technology. So just a brief overview of the BBC. After the First World War, commercial radio technology became a reality, and the BBC in Britain was incorporated in 1923 as a radio broadcaster. But very quickly from that point, in 1927, they started experimenting with television technology as well, after a man called John Baird demonstrated the first commercial television. And then there's a period in the early 1930s where they're doing kind of experimental broadcasts. And then in 1936, they launch a full television service. And to give you some idea of numbers, there are about 4,000 television sets in Britain by 1939. There was no service at all in the war because they were afraid German pilots might follow television signals. But after the war, they relaunched in 1946, and television ownership very quickly rises. So you've got 500,000 sets in Britain by 1950, and then 20 million in 1960, which was two-thirds of the population. So you can see how quickly it becomes a common technology in many homes. And just a few quick technical definitions as well. In this talk, when I'm talking about film, I'm talking about the physical stuff. Photosensitive film that you capture an image on by exposing it to light through a camera lens, whereas television is an image that's captured electronically through a camera and then broadcast by microwave normally and recreated on a receiver set, usually in your own home, through a cathode ray tube in this period. And then we're looking specifically as well at the BBC's outside broadcast unit, because an outside broadcast is any broadcast which is not in the studio. And obviously, when they're broadcasting racing or any live sport, they have to go to the actual place where it's taking place. And that's an outside broadcast, which required a different type of technology to studio cameras. So racing was extremely important to the BBC. The BBC sport was the fifth most popular type of programme whenever they surveyed people across several decades. And within the BBC management as well, looking at the internal memos, letters they're sending to each other, they're very keen on broadcasting sport as a part of British life and on using live sport to sell television to the public. And horse racing within that is usually, again, quite consistently the fifth most popular sport, so not quite as big as boxing, football at the very top, but still quite popular, repeatedly getting 5 million viewers on regular broadcasts, and then going up to 16 to 18 million for the big events once there are enough televisions in the country, which is comparable to kind of the FA Cup final or a big boxing match. So it was very popular. And as well, the BBC repeatedly demonstrated their commitment to broadcasting racing by just the amount of money they were willing to pay for it. The events like the Grand National, Royal Ascot, were the most costly events for the BBC to get the rights to broadcast from 1939 through all the way up to 1960. Only in 1960s, boxing becoming sort of comparable in price. So, how did they first try and broadcast racing? Well, the earliest television technology, which you would have found in the late 1920s, would have looked like this. This is a modern recreation of the first Baird television machine. It would have output an image of about 30 lines, which you can see a demonstration of there. That's the bare minimum you need to recognise a human face. It was not very good, of course, for broadcasting any quick movements. And a racehorse, of course, is very quick. And as well, it was not really suited for broadcast anything outside of a studio. You see the technology there. This is actually a mechanical television. So what's happening is there's a big spinning disc. And behind those walls there is a studio where whatever they're televising is sat. Usually a person just sat down. And basically the disc is reflecting the beam of light in such a way to create that the camera can pick it up. And then it gets transferred to your mechanical television at home, which also has a big spinning disc. And if you look into a viewfinder, you can see an image. It was not very, very suitable at all, and not at all suitable for broadcasting outside of the studio. This was a problem, of course, when the BBC decided they wanted to broadcast the 1931 Epsom Derby as part of their commitment to driving television ownership showcasing for the public the excitement of television. That's something they come back to again and again, the excitement of live television. So in response, they tasked John Baird with designing a new and better type of camera that would be able to actually broadcast from outdoors. What he designed was something of a monstrosity that probably shouldn't have worked. He designed a camera. Unfortunately, there are no pictures, as far as I know, in existence of this. But the idea was it would use a photosensitive film, so like in a movie camera, to actually capture what was happening. And then the film would immediately go through a series of chemical baths to develop it within 90 seconds, at which point it would be put in front of a television camera. And that was how they were going to get the images for the people at home. It was not very successful. They did technically broadcast the 1931 Derby. Apparently, viewers saw the horses pass the winning post, but mostly it couldn't even work for long enough to take in the full 2-minute length of a horse race. Instead, most of the broadcast was they had to use still pictures coupled with the sound commentary through radio. I did have a bit of footage. This is not the BBC, this is Pathé, but I might be slightly pressed for time, so I'll have to dispense with that for now. But the BBC, what this 1931 Derby demonstrated to the BBC is that their technology was nowhere near the level it needed to capture any outside broadcast, but especially the rapid movements of the racehorse, which of course you saw what a picture would have looked like of only 30 lines. It was basically impossible for the viewers to tell what was going on at home. So they took a several-year break from outside broadcasts as they attempted to renew their technology. And by 1936, when they launched the full television service, the mechanical camera had been dispensed with. Unfortunately, John Baird could not design something good enough for the task, and they had adopted an all-electronic camera system, which might be more familiar to us today. They did do a successful outside broadcast of the coronation of George VI in early May 1937, which might explain why they declined to do the same from the 1937 Derby. I'm not quite sure. You can read it behind me. This is the Radio Times advert for the Derby 1937. In this one, they were not able to actually broadcast footage from the race. Instead, repeating what they'd done at the Grand National, viewers had to content themselves with still pictures from the course coupled with the radio commentary. And actually the BBC pulled a bit of a trick here, because the pictures they were seeing were not from the 37 Derby, but actually reused pictures from the 1936 Derby, which were apparently for atmosphere only. In 1938, the BBC again turned their attention to trying to do a sports broadcast. And after a successful experiment on a rugby match in March 1938, they intended to fully broadcast the 1938 renewal of the Epsom Stakes, which is the main derby race at Epsom. Despite the efforts of a particularly unhelpful groundskeeper, they did successfully broadcast the full race, all 2 minutes of it. And in the memos that they're sending to each other, the letters, and the audience feedback that they're getting afterwards, they seem to think it's generally quite a technical success. As they say to each other, it gave a passable idea at the racing. So The public seemed to like it. They thought it was quite novel, but they did identify several complaints that they had with the broadcast that were either lesser or were not present when they'd previously tried to broadcast rugby. The main ones were that the cameras were unable to pan very quickly to follow the horses. They found that when they tried to pan the cameras, it produced terrible distortion in the image, and you wouldn't be able to see what was going on. And this was particularly difficult because they were limited to two cameras in fixed positions on the course, so they could not follow the racehorses all the way around the track and had to content themselves with observing a certain bend. So you only really got to see a part of the race. And the distance of the cameras, therefore, combined with the speed of the horses, made it difficult to distinguish one horse from another. Remember, there's no colour at this time, so viewers couldn't distinguish the livery of the jockeys or on the horses by colour, and the speed that they were going made it quite impossible to tell apart any markings. Combined with the low definition of the television picture as well. Even though it was higher definition than the 1931 broadcast, people were talking about HDTV even then. It wasn't good enough. And the final major problem was viewers were hearing the radio commentary on top of this, and the radio commentators couldn't see what was being broadcast, so their commentary was mismatched with the picture, which would often lead the viewers to misidentify a horse. From all this, the people in charge of the outside broadcasting department locate a set of unique problems that they faced with televising the equine athlete. First of all is the location of the racecourses. Because the racecourses are, of course, built for the size and speed of a horse, they were much, much bigger than any grounds that you'd use for exclusively human sports. If you think about a football pitch, it's maybe 100 metres by 120. Epsom racecourse is much, much bigger than that. And, of course, when they're using cameras that they can't move during the broadcast, and they only have two of them, it becomes quite difficult to actually take in a view of the entire race. And as well, because the race courses tended to be in much more rural locations, again, because that's where it was best to keep the horses, they couldn't keep them in the cities, they had a lot of problems getting a strong enough broadcast signal to actually get the image to people's televisions at home. So not only was the camera farther away as well, but of course the race horses are going much faster than any human athletes. And then the low definition of the camera is made for blurry and murky pictures. And as we said, we can't move the camera around either. And to top it all off, because the race is so short, it's only a couple of minutes, any technical hitch could ruin the entire broadcast. If you think about football or rugby, you've got 80 or 90 minutes. If there's a problem, the viewer can kind of get their bearings again, they can settle back in, they can correct the BBC can correct the problem mid-broadcast. For a race, they found really everything had to go right the first time. And then, as they found out, they had a lot of problems distinguishing the livery of the horses as well. So people, especially for people who were betting at home, it was not a very good experience trying to find out if your horse had won. You usually had to wait for the radio commentators to announce it, in which case, why would you have a television in the first place? So how did they adapt to this? Well, they had the 1939 Derby, they made very little changes, partly because it was quite uncertain until the last minute whether or not they'd actually be able to shoot there, because the Epsom Grandstand Association was quite uncertain about whether or not to grant them the rights. But they did have a lot of plans for the 1940 Derby, but unfortunately all television got cancelled due to the war, so they weren't able to implement any of these at that time. But from the relaunch of the service in 1946, what we see is a huge adoption of new technology by the BBC, partly because television ownership is going up so much. They've got more licence payers, mean more funding, and they're very much trying to sell television to the public. So you'll thank me, I'm sure, for not going through every single camera that they bought and talking about its technical features. But they do buy, compared to two outside broadcast units, and by that I mean it's a transmitter van and it's two cameras before the war. They move up to three or four cameras per unit after the war. So they had two units before the war, and then they buy nine over the 14-year period from 1946 to 60 with 3 to 4 cameras each, and they all see, varying years of service, but they're very much trying to experiment with technology and find the best way to broadcast these sporting events. And they renew their commitment to live sport as well, especially after 1955, when they're trying to compete with ITV, and they find that that audiences really have quite high demands for standards, especially compared to commercial television, which now has quite an influx of money from advertisers. So what sort of adaptations did the BBC make? I like this quote from a 1963 report, which is, "There can be no doubt the public has come to expect a degree of professionalism from the BBC. And what could be worse than that, having the audiences actually expect something of you?" Well, I'm not going to sit here and suggest that every single decision made by the BBC was motivated by horse racing, but I think certainly we can locate a few elements of technology that were really driven by the need to capture these equine athletes over and above the human athletes, which they were normally photographing. So we have some adaptations which do affect, benefit all outside broadcasts, units that can carry more cameras, and also cameras that can actually be mobile. That's especially important for racing, as they identify the need to drive the camera alongside the track, or to take the camera around the breadth of a course in advance of the race, so take into the paddock and have interviews with the trainers and so on. And also they invest heavily in wireless communication between cameras and the broadcast van. When they're preparing for the 1940 Derby, they're talking about how they're going to bury cable. They have to lay physical cables to get the camera signal back to the van. But Michael, investing in wireless technology is especially useful when they're trying to get cameras all over the course. And then two technologies which can be very concretely linked to racing is investment in slow motion and photo finish, which I think was a brand name, but photo finish technologies in the early 1960s. They invest first of all in the technology to photograph the races at a very high speed and then replay it later on at a slower speed to give you give viewers a clearer picture and a better idea of what's going on. Obviously nowadays we're very much used to the slow motion replay in sports broadcasting, and photo finish as well. The technology to have a camera at the finish line taking a very large number of pictures such that they can get that photo finish moment, which of course is a phrase which comes from racing itself. And this turns into a quite a reciprocal relationship with the race courses. In 1960, enthusiast newspaper The Racehorse published an article saying national hunt racing badly in need of cameras. Hunt racing, that means steeple jumping, by the way, compared to flat racing, which is just over a flat course. But a lot by the early 60s, a lot of race courses were demanding BBC cameras, both because of this technology that they could provide in settling disputes, and it was by the late 60s, mid to late 60s, a standard feature of the BBC's contracts that if there was any dispute in the race or any need to review footage, the BBC would just make it available as a standard feature. And as well, lost my place there. And then the second major adaptation they make is in standards of presentation. As you might have been able to tell, a lot of the time in the early period, broadcasting was a very amateur affair, especially in regards to the relationship between commentators and the pitch that they were commentating over. It was usually radio broadcasting. And they didn't have a good idea of what they were actually, the images that they were talking about. But in 1960, racing is the first sport of the BBC that they actively standardise the methods of presentation that they're going to use for all broadcasts of the sport. And you can see some stipulations there. The commentators have to identify the runners. The camera is instructed to be in a specific position to pick them up. And then the commentator has to finish the description with the name of horse again, so viewers are in no doubt over what they've seen. And then, as well, talking about what horses to show and where what is important for the audience to see, especially. This is This is all largely because, as they identified in 38, they really needed to be technically perfect, and everyone needed to know what they were doing, otherwise the whole thing was up. And yes, that is, so those were the adaptations they made in that 15-year period of experimentation. So that's me out of time and the end of the talk. I just quite like this quote, inviting questions. This is one of the earliest audience surveys they had. And just like the BBC, from time to time, I like very much like to have your opinion about things. So thank you very much.